A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on December 31, 1995, in the series Now, But Then, entitled Face to Face. The scripture readings are Psalm 16, verses 5 through 11, 1 Corinthians 13, verses 8 through 13, and Matthew 1, verses 18 through 25. The texts for the sermon are Psalm 16, verses 5 and 11, and Matthew 1, verse 23. Copyright Grand Valley State University.
Now, but then, that juxtaposition of our present experience and that dream within our hearts of a different kind of reality, an alternative kind of existence. Now, but then. This present experience, and then that which seems so deep within us, that intuition that what is now is not all there will be. The juxtaposition of present experience and future expectation, that seems to be so intrinsic to our human situation. It has been the theme of our Advent and now our Christmastide reflection, and it comes, of course, from Paul's 1 Corinthians 13 hymn of love, where in that last paragraph he contrasts the now and the then. But it wasn't Paul's invention by any means. It has been understood long since that the human experience is an experience that stands in contrast to that which it is possible to conceive within the human heart and mind. The Church of England made a statement, Christian Believing, which I have cited a couple of times, which I think says it so well, that life is an adventure. It is a voyage of discovery. It is a journey sustained by faith and hope as we move towards the final and complete communion of love that is at the heart of all things. Life is an adventure, a voyage, a journey. There is movement, and in the present, in the now, there is an experience, a mix of experience that is in contrast to the then that we can dream of. And so we have reflected together about that contrast and how it is by faith and hope that we move toward love, which the Christmas miracle tells us is really at the heart of all things. Paul didn't invent that idea. As I said a moment ago, Isaiah knew of it. For the familiar prophecy from that ancient poet spoke about the light dawning on those who dwelled in darkness, in the land of the shadow of death. And when Luke was telling the story of Jesus, he cited the song of Zechariah, who celebrated the birth of his son John as the forerunner of the one who would represent the tender mercy of God in the dawning of the light upon those who dwelled in the land of the shadow of death. So that we find that expression, it seems to be so deep within us. There is the dawning of light, even while the darkness persists. The light has come, thank God, but the darkness persists. Or as John said, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness will never overcome it, thank God. But the light shines in the darkness. And biblical faith is honest, honest to human experience. There's no denial in it, no denial of the darkness, and there's no call to escape it. There is an honest engagement of it. There is the proclamation of the light dawning, the light shining in the darkness, but the darkness is real. The now of human experience is an experience that is full of ambiguity, full of potential pain and loss, disappointment. There are the times of joy and celebration, and we do celebrate the fact that the light has come. But we celebrate the light still under the shadows, in the darkness that continues to threaten us at all times on this adventure, this voyage, this journey that is human life. The psalmist understood the contrast between the now and the then. Psalm 16 is a marvelous, marvelous poem, hymn of praise, in which the psalmist speaks about the now as the time in which he is conscious of the presence of God. He says in the 8th verse, I have set the Lord always before me. And the Hebrew in this case could be translated as accurately, I have set the Lord before my face. And because the Lord is set before his face, he says, therefore I am steadfast, unmovable. In other words, there was a place to stand. There was a certain solidity to his life, a certain stability that enabled him to negotiate the journey and to move through the darkness, conscious of the light, because he had set the Lord before his face. And because he had set the Lord before his face, even in this present uneven human experience, he could say, therefore my heart rejoices, my soul is glad, my body, even my body, rests secure. But he was also aware that this now, in which he had set the Lord before his face and experienced a certain steadfastness, was not the last word. For he goes on to speak about the then. Thou wilt show me the path of life. In thy presence is fullness of joy. In thy right hand pleasures forevermore. One of the rare instances in the Hebrew scriptures where something more is referred to. But just as earlier I said you could translate, I have set the Lord before my face. So in this case, with a precise synonym, the psalmist juxtaposes the now with the then when he writes, before the Lord's face there are pleasures forevermore. And so the psalmist already knew that of which the apostle Paul wrote. The psalmist already knew what it was to have the Lord before his face here, anticipating the time when he would be before the Lord's face then. Face to face, God before my face. That is, living with a consciousness, an attentiveness, an awareness of a presence. God before my face now. I before God's face then. And the fullness of joy. And if this was true for the psalmist, how much more for us who live post-Christmas, for whom the light has dawned in the Word made flesh, the one of whom Matthew wrote, citing Isaiah, the ancient prophet, this one who was fulfilling the role of that child born in ancient Israel as a sign of God's presence, therefore named Emmanuel, Matthew said, Jesus was Emmanuel. Jesus was the sign. Jesus was the presence of God here and now. So if the psalmist could say, I have set the Lord before my face, how much more intimately can we say also that that presence before our face actually has a face? As Paul writes in another place, we've seen the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus. So our experience now can be characterized as face to face. In the psalmist's words, the Lord before my face, or in Paul's word, the glory of God in the face of Jesus, enabling me to have a consciousness of a presence, and therefore making me steadfast as I negotiate the journey that has so many ups and downs, such a mixture of light and shadow, of joy and sadness, of gain and loss. I can make it. This life, this now experience is to be affirmed. Healthy biblical faith affirms the now. There has been some unhealthy Christian expression that would almost seem as though we simply mark time here until some future time, that we go through this veil of tears, as it were, waiting for something else and failing, I think, to live fully, richly in this present moment. This now is filled with God's presence. But Paul knew that that now experience has its limitations. Now I know in part, but then I will know as I have been fully known. Now I see through a glass, darkly, dimly, gropingly I make my way, but then face to face. Paul knew that present human experience was an experience upon which the light had dawned. He celebrated it. He proclaimed it to the ends of the earth. But when he had said his last word, he acknowledged something more. There is the but then. And isn't it true? Isn't it true for us all? The now, thank God, filled with a presence. The now, celebrating the incarnation, the presence of God in the humanity of Jesus, that the Infinite One took the garb of our finitude and stood among us, full of grace and truth. Thank God for that. But it's not enough, is it? If you're really honest to the yearning of your heart, it's not enough, is it? There is always that ache within us, that yearning within us, that restlessness within us. Isn't it true? We know a lot. We know a lot about a lot of things. But isn't it true that the more that we know, the more we know that we know so little? The more we know, are we not more aware of the fact that we do not really penetrate to the mystery? Does not the mystery grow all the more mysterious the more we know? And we know joy, but how quickly it can fade. And in a moment's time, become its opposite. And we know love. But is it not true that the more deeply we love, the more deeply is that yearning to know even more deeply the loved one? And so, isn't it true that finally we have a sense that the now is not enough to satisfy that which seems to be as human can be. If we would only trust the intuition, the intimations of eternity, of transcendence, then I think we would say, all of this so very good, thank God, though laced with darkness, but it's not enough. If the human heart and soul and being would finally be satisfied. It's the last Sunday of another year. And we take a calendar down and we put a new one in its place. And it's a sign that time is passing. And an end will come. My end will come. Or the end of those I love. And in this now experience, in the end, well, I hope in the end I'll still be wondering, still be questing, still be yearning, still have that ache within. And I'm sure that when my end comes, or the end of the one I love, it won't be enough. It won't be enough, will it? There's something within us that whispers to us, there must be something more. Paul said there was. Paul said there's not only now, there is then. I think that Hans Küng has expressed it so well. To believe in an eternal life means in reasonable trust and enlightened faith, in tried and tested hope, to rely on the fact that I shall one day be fully understood, freed from guilt and definitively accepted, and can be myself without fear, that my impenetrable and ambivalent existence, like the profoundly discordant history of humanity as a whole, will one day become finally transparent, and the question of the meaning of history will one day be fulfilled, finally answered. I believe that. And I doubt whether there is any ultimate peace and satisfaction in a human heart that thinks deeply and loves prodigally unless there is that deep conviction. Maybe Snoopy says it best this morning. Did you read Snoopy yesterday? Peanuts, I mean. It was a monologue by Snoopy. In fact, he didn't say anything. There were those little bubbles that means he was simply thinking thoughts. He probably heard folks wishing each other Happy New Year. He said, Happy New Year? I don't know about New Year. I know that my food is in my red dish and my water is in my yellow dish, but I don't know what year it is. But you do. You know that another year has passed and you're entering a new year and you wonder what time it is. Leslie Weatherhead suggests that life may be like the experience of a grand cruise in the Caribbean. And then he says, what if one day in the midst of the ocean, the captain came on the loudspeaker and said, the food, the meals will continue, the midnight snacks, the lavish brunches, the dances, the movies, all of the entertainment. Everything will continue as long as we have provision. But I am no longer heading for the port. We're just going to circle here in the ocean. And Weatherhead says, for the first few days, it would seem as though nothing had changed. But wouldn't it be true that gradually, one by one, folks would simply bail out? Because we're not made for meaninglessness. We're on a journey, an adventure, a voyage of discovery. And by faith in hope, we're moving toward that in which we fully trust, that final and complete communion of love which is at the heart of all things. And we've learned that we can live even now face to face, but with the promise of a then, when it will be face to face. Face to face with those we've loved and lost a while. Face to face with the one who loved us and gave himself for us. Now, live fully, dear friend. But then, be assured, the best is yet to be.